Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, Mo, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analytics hour and their website analyticshour.io. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 72. Have you ever switched jobs on purpose? Do you spend time thinking about whether things will go well when you do switch jobs? I know I used to. In today's fast-paced technology world, you've got to keep your skills current. Back in episode 35, we talked about whether data science was the future of all analysts. And then more recently, Gigi Geiger sent us an email about whether or not analytics professionals need to become data scientists to stay current in the market. So it's time to crack this one back open and spend a little more time. But this time, we brought in some big career guns. There is this guy that you will eventually talk to in your career about your career. And no, it is not Tim Wilson, but he is my co-host. Welcome, Tim.
Who's it doing, Michael?
You know, I wasn't even ready for that. Also, Mo Kiss, who has a wildly successful career in analytics and is my other co-host. Welcome, Mo.
Hi, guys.
Do it. See, Tim threw me off. I would have been ready for you, but then the what's it anyways.
That's what I'm here for.
How's it going?
Is that really what you say?
How's it going?
Oh, okay. That sounds not hard to figure out. Anyway, and I am Michael Helbig, but who I was speaking of before, he's a recruiter with kind of a golden touch. The man with the jobs and the knowledge to put the right people in them, I'm talking about Corey Prohens. He has recruited in the IT world and in other industries, but he found his true calling about 11 years ago when he opened IQ Workforce to solve the staffing needs of the analytics industry. He's leading a recruiting and retaining analytics talent workshop at the DA Hub, which is coming up in just a few days. And he also surfs regularly from his home in Long Island, New York. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Thank you so much, Michael. Greatest intro ever.
Hey, that's all I do on the show. Now Tim will ask you some questions and we'll get this whole thing wrapped up in a nice bundle. No, actually, so this is something that actually is very current. I think a lot of analysts, no matter where they're at, they're asking this question of themselves, like, what is it that I need to be? Do I need to become a super technical data scientist? Can I focus on some of these other things? So what kinds of things have you noticed as trends in the marketplace, and how do people position themselves to make the most out of their careers?
Sure. Well, I think that there have been two, you know, kind of big trends that have been really going on for years now. And I would say one is the sort of convergence of the quote-unquote business becoming more analytical while the analysts are moving towards the business. You know, as you mentioned earlier, you know, Gigi asked the question, marketers are, you know, becoming more data savvy. So I think that's one big trend and seems to be causing some concern. And the other one is that digital analysts are working with multiple data sources. You know, I don't necessarily see a trend toward, you know, digital analysts becoming data scientists. I really think that those are two very different professions if you define data scientist, you know, the way that I do. But I can see, you know, potentially digital analysts in the future, 5-10 years from now, becoming a little bit more data science-y. So picking up some tech skills, picking up some quant skills, and, you know, sort of inching in that direction. But I don't see everybody sort of growing up to become data scientists in 10 years.
Well, so when they're working with multiple data sources, are they going into multiple tools and exporting and then working in Excel, or are companies looking at them and saying, because you're working from multiple sources, either we're feeding all our data into a data warehouse and you're going to work with the data there, or are they saying, maybe we don't need you as a data scientist, but we need you comfortable with Python or R or SPSS or something to pull the data out. Like, how, when it comes to the multiple data sources, how are companies expecting analysts to work with that data?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the tools are different, and the, you know, the data setup is different, obviously, company by company, and so is the structure of the team, you know, in terms of who does what, you know, in the analytics organization or multiple analytics teams. But I think at the end of the day, if you're a digital analyst and you want to advance your career, you want to be able to solve problems, answer questions about the customer across different touch points. So you need to be able to use, you know, digital data, offline data, customer data to synthesize an analysis. Yes, in some of those cases, a job will require somebody to have the technical skills to sort of pull all that together, you know, but, you know, definitely not always. You know, I think the usual paradigm is, you know, in a larger organization, there'll be multiple people whose jobs it is to break that down to smaller pieces, you know, big company, small job, you know, in a smaller shop, they might look for one person who can do all of that. But obviously, the more things that you look for one person to do, the harder that job becomes to fill. And, you know, you tend to sacrifice, you know, some of the, you know, sort of big skills when you're looking for somebody who can accomplish all of those technical goals.
Yeah. So I want to jump back for a second. Near the beginning, you said the way I would define data science or data scientist.
Now, so, you're going to make him do it.
Well, I feel like it's actually helpful because, Corey, you talk to a lot of companies who are searching for those kinds of roles. So I feel like your definition is actually going to be helpful in terms of understanding where the marketplace is. So you're probably a good authority to say what a data scientist is or isn't. And of course, Tim will disagree with you, but, you know, I'm here for you.
No, to be fair, I say that it is defined many different ways by many different people.
Well, sure. Anyways,
your obsession, Michael, is that they have to be building product. So
that's
good. I'm glad Corey's going to say it's not building
product. It's fine. Go ahead, Corey.
I'm not here to break any ties, but
influence you.
And we certainly have, you know, if you look at our website right now, this is not a plug, but if you look at our website right now, there are a whole bunch of data science jobs up there, and they're all different jobs. So I think that sort of goes to Tim's point a little bit. But I actually saw on a guy's resume, or rather on a
LinkedIn. Wait, so hold on. That's score one for Tim? I know you're not breaking ties.
If you are keeping score,
sure.
Then yes.
Okay.
I saw on it. I'm gonna put one in Mike's column in a second
here. There you go.
Damn it.
I live for this.
I saw on this guy's LinkedIn profile just a couple of weeks ago a line that says, I program computers to solve math problems. And I was like, that guy's a data scientist. So, you know, to me, the definition of a data scientist is there's a few different components to it. Number one, you're working with real big data. Number two, you've got academic and professional quant chops, you know, meaning you can seriously do modeling, you know, from scratch, or, you know, develop models. And number three, you've got, you know, some serious programming skills, and you put that all together with somebody who understands your business, and you've got yourself a data scientist. The reality of the situation is there are probably, I'll make up a number and say under 1,000 people in the world who fit that description, you know, so that's the, you know, the strict definition. And then, you know, depending on, you know, how the company is structured, they'll have a data science department that is made up of people who have those skills, and cumulatively they form a data science team.
Corey, I actually really like your definition. I think a lot of people kind of use the term a bit willy-nilly, but in Australia, it's actually, my team's quite different. We have, in the last two roles I've been in, we have digital analysts and we have data scientists, and we're in one team. And for 95% of the time, we do exactly the same work. Like we put out a role maybe a couple of months ago now, and there was an expectation. It was an analyst role, and they had to know SQL, R, or Python. You had to know one of them. So I definitely think were being, I guess, moving in that direction.
That was a data science role or an analyst role? Or
no, that was an analyst role. And the analyst role said you had to know one of those languages. And everyone on our team knows one, if not a bit of two. And that's
so when you guys go out to lunch, as a team, do the data scientists have to buy because they're getting paid more, even though they're doing the same job?
Well, that's a whole other level of discussion.
Uh-oh. Well, let's just make the show about that. I heard
I want Michael to make us back up and have Corey define big data.
Thought had crossed my mind, but no, I'll stop short of that. Because I think there was a couple things. A, I think my definition is going through some nuances. So I don't necessarily think that product is always an outcome of what a data science does. But I do think a data scientist takes that math skill that Corey was talking about and the statistical capabilities, the programming concepts, and is able to bring solutions to business problems to bear with them. And that is completing the data scientist, that third piece. And sometimes that means...
Business.
So being able to have the business acumen. So sometimes that comes out in terms of things that the rest of the business can use to actually utilize data that they couldn't have used before until the data scientist created an effective model and system for it. But reality is there could be analysis or insight generated against a specific problem, but that's where the application of both the programming skill and the statistical and the modeling capability come to bear. Because a lot of people can program in Python, but can't solve business problems.
Well, but it's interesting, and I know, Corey, you were just kind of rattling it off very well, but it was, working with big data, real quant skills, and some level of programming. So it was like three things, and able to bring it to bear to the business. How core, if somebody can crank through on those three elements, do they also individually need, are you seeing that companies are expecting them to also be able to map to the business problem, or are companies saying, no, we have other roles, maybe it's a traditional analyst, maybe it's a business analyst or something else, who will work with them on that alignment with the business that they're actually solving the right problems? Or is that just the difference between a capable data scientist and a really, effective data scientist?
Yeah, so I think that all of the jobs that we work on, whether you call it an analyst or a data scientist, I think of it in terms of just a simple Venn diagram with three circles, right? You've got the quant skills, you've got the tech skills, and you've got the business skills. Okay, so each job is going to overlap differently, based on what the business needs, based on how the team is structured. So there is no one, answer to that question, Tim. It really depends on the company, and it depends on the situation.
Well, but so I feel like, and I now wish I'd had the forethought to ask you to go check your system right now, and even I'm sure right now when we're recording and right now when this actually launches, there are postings on your site that say data scientist. And to your credit, 11 years ago, you sort of staked out a spot in the digital analytics industry and have kind of been the go-to recruiter. Do you know, or can you find out, I'll throw it in the show notes afterwards, when the first time you actually posted a position that was data scientist? Because I feel like the technical, we say technical skills, but in my mind, 5 years ago, when we said technical skills, we were talking about JavaScript, jQuery, the DOM, understanding the data collection. And in that definition of data scientist, the technical skills is much more about getting data out of systems, not data capture. So I think I just blathered on and asked four questions. But
yeah, no,
would you like to respond?
I would love to respond. First of all, no, I don't know when was the first time I could guess, it was probably about 6 or 7 years ago that, it was the first time we posted a job with that title. The other part, where you said, if you back up 5 or 6 years ago when we talked about technical skills, we were talking about, sort of the implementation side of digital analytics, the integration of data. And I think when you're talking, about we, meaning the digital analytics community, yes, that's what we were talking about. But still, I think if you go back 5 or 6 years ago, when you're talking about the, you know, the data science community, you know, Davenport, help me out.
Tom Davenport.
Thank you. The Tom Davenport, you know, definition of data science. I think that the same, you know, sort of paradigm existed on the technical side. It was the programming skills. You know, have those programming languages evolved and become more prominent since then? Of course they have. But even then, let's say it was SAS instead of R and Python. You know, but you still needed to be able to program. And then on the quant side, it was, you know, still very much statistical analysis or beyond statistical analysis, modeling. So I think that the data scientist Venn diagram, you know, hasn't really changed that much in that period.
Just speaking as a current analyst, I do think that kind of merge between, I guess, how much you have to learn also depends a lot on the company, right? I mean, if you have, and in some of the companies I've worked in, where you have an amazing data team that have capacity to give you lots of help as an analyst, you're kind of not pushed towards learning those more technical things about how you actually extract data out of an API and clean it and prepare it, because you've got, I guess, a team supporting you. But when you're working in a smaller company, or you have a team that, I guess, you don't have a data team, or you don't have a data team that have the time to devote to, I guess, resourcing analysts with the data that they need, you really are kind of on your own, and you have to learn those skills, because otherwise you can't do your job.
That's absolutely, I couldn't agree with that more. And, you know, I saw, forgive me, I don't remember exactly where I read it, but I should be giving credit to somebody, but I saw something the other day about data scientists. For every data scientist that's hired, two engineers are hired that enable them to do their job, basically to get the data cleaned up and make it decent enough that you can, you know, do some modeling and create some kind of work product out of it. So yeah, I threw the word product in there for you, Michael.
Perfect. Thank you.
You could put that.
Do you find people, because I like data engineering seems like one of those things that, and again, it goes to the organization. They may want what data engineering, which I think is kind of a subset or one part of a potential, the full scope of a data scientist, or is data engineering?
Well, data engineering has been totally around separate for a long time, ever since we've done ETL on data.
Mm. Yep.
Right. But I guess in the digital data world, are there companies that are looking for a data engineer, but they feel like they are going to have more luck if they advertise for a data scientist?
Yeah, so, or
maybe flip it around. Is that a role of a data scientist can be to do data engineering?
Plenty of data scientists going around doing the job of a data engineer. That's happening, I think.
No doubt. And I think, you know, ideally, you know, a company would love to hire a room full of fully skilled data scientists who can do both data engineering and, you know, the statistical side of the job, you know, the quantitative side of the job. But in reality, you have to put together a team to accomplish these things. And, you know, you're inevitably, once you get to a certain scale, you know, you're going to need a bunch of data engineers to pull the data and clean it up. And, you know, you've got a bunch of messy, you know, unstructured data from lots of different places. They've got to, you know, make it usable for the quote unquote data scientists.
So if we put the, I feel like we kind of went right down where a lot of the conversations wind up being, which is what is big data? What is data science? What's data engineering versus data science? What are those skills? How do they complement analysts? What do you see on the flip side? And I think this gets back a little bit to some of the exchange with Gigi around the future and the opportunity for growth and advancement for, call it, a traditional digital analyst that says, I've gotten to where I know the business really well. I can understand the business problems. I'm fine understanding what data science is and what can be done with it, but I don't really want to head down into that world. Are you seeing roles for where that's what companies are still looking for, is they Absolutely. Want somebody who can actually really partner with marketing or the product team and not necessarily get into the world of you know, modeling and the super technical side, but can still bridge that gap between, you know, guiding the business is into asking smart questions and figuring out how to communicate recommendations back to them.
Yeah, I don't think those jobs are going away, Tim. First of all, I mean, if you look at our business, you know, we're now filling fewer sort of pure play digital analytics jobs than we used to. But at the same time, there are more people out there using digital analytics data and tools. You know, like I said before, that's kind of a big trend. But I think, you know, if you fast forward, you know, 5 or 10 years from now, I think the future, you know, digital analyst is going to be someone who is an expert on digital as a business, you know, and is really good at answering questions with data and explaining it to executives. We still need the analyst to be the bridge between the business and the data. Yes, the business is becoming more data savvy, but that's not an overnight thing. You know, that's a trend that's going to take a generation to come to fruition. So I think that person's going to, you know, the digital analyst of the future is a lot like the digital analyst of today. They need some level of analytics skills, some level of tech skills, and they need to be experts in the business, and they need to be able to communicate to the business. They might work alongside data scientists in an analytics organization, but you don't have to become a data scientist to work in analytics over the next 20 or 30 years.
So, Corey, just on that, I'm just wondering in the US whether you've seen any, I guess, evidence of organizations expecting more from their digital analyst, I guess, with more rise and more positions in companies being data science-y. Do you see any changes in the expectations of what people want out of their analysts?
No doubt. I think that what you said before about your team is not unusual. You know, when we work on you know, digital analytics roles now, they'll often have SQL, you know, as a requirement because, you know, they need people to not just get into their digital, you know, their Adobe tool stack. They want them to get into the SQL data warehouse with all the other, you know, data and be able to do some, you know, slightly more, you know, complex analysis. I think that some of the, you know, but that's some of the jobs. That's not all of the jobs. And part of this also has to do with, you know, where the company is on that, you know, analytics maturity curve. There are still lots of companies out there that this is pretty new for. We're still working with those companies who are just getting marketing analytics, digital analytics going, or in the second, third, fourth inning of that. There's still a big part of the market where that's going to be the case over the next decade.
So Mo, you're asking the question about those roles, but you also said you feel like at the Iconic that there's kind of been a blurring and blending of the two different roles. Was that one where there was an ideal that, yes, there was a distribution of the analyst was going to be the business savvy, the communication, the bridging, the requirements, and they'd be partnered with data science? Like, what happened there? Like, it seems like it's almost a, oh, this was an ideal, but it hasn't quite been achieved. No. Mo, critique your company
actually,
right now.
No, that's
not really the question.
I think the opposite has happened, where we had a data scientist that worked with us, and now my current boss is a trained data scientist that I would describe as one of those weird unicorns that can do everything. And the environment has, I guess, encouraged all of the analysts to learn more, do more. You kind of can't rely on someone in the data team to get you the data that you need when you need it. So you sort of start hacking around to figure it out yourself, and then your skills just keep evolving. Like, I have colleagues now who introduce themselves as data analysts rather than digital analysts, even though that's been their professional career, because really they're taking that digital analytics data and they're melding it with all of the other data sets that we have. And I'm in that same boat, but I probably still wouldn't call myself a data analyst. But we had this conversation last year at Measure Camp where one of the guys that I used to work with was like, but Mo, you're a data scientist. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And he's like, we do the same thing. I'm like, still doesn't make me a data. I would never apply for a job that's called a data scientist. But he would. So
I don't disagree with that, Mo. I think in the same way, I don't think of myself as a analytics developer or technical person, even though I've done many implementations, because there's a higher level of skill that I see can be brought to bear by people who'd really have that. In the same way, I'm not ever going to be a data scientist, you know, unless SEMO, you know, comes through and actually does tutor me personally, I guess. And the other thing, and I'm going to steal something that I heard from Angela Bassa. She's the director of data science at iRobot. I heard in a talk she gave, she's like, there's no unicorns, right? Nobody has like every thing you're looking for in a data scientist. And so it's kind of like, as you increase in your level of sophistication, we'll all find our spots that kind of we excel in.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in on the end of what Mo said there. And I think that the trend of digital analysts becoming data analysts is much more significant than, you know, any trend of digital analysts becoming data scientists. Yes, it's semantic, you know, to some degree, but I think that, you know, what essentially that means is that, you know, in the now and in the future, more and more in the future, it doesn't matter as much where the data came from, and the designation of digital, you know, like I said before, is more about the business of digital than where the data came from. And, you know, data analyst is more likely, you know, what your title is going to be 10 years from now than data scientist.
Corey, I just wanted to ask, on the side of, I guess, the managers, as these analysts are evolving and data scientists are coming more in the picture, are there challenges, are you seeing, when you're putting managers in companies to be able to actually, you know, lead these teams when, I mean, data science is probably not, you know, like I said, our team is hybrid. We have data scientists and analysts in it, and my last company was the same. I mean, unless you're one of those more technical data scientists, like, there are challenges there for managing teams when maybe you're not as across what they're doing now than you might have been in the past.
Those are brutal roles for companies to fill at this point, because, you know, you're talking about a skill set that's pretty new, and yet you need to find somebody who's, you know, generally our clients are looking for people who have already managed multidisciplinary analytics teams across multiple data sources and different skill sets, you know, quant tech, etc. So yeah, it's a huge challenge. You know, again, if you look at our job postings, and that's not a plug, you know, they're the director of analytics, the director of data science, you know, the director of statistical analysis roles, very tough to find. I think that, you know, for one person, you know, the other thing that's hard about it is, just because you're a good data analyst doesn't mean that you're going to be a great manager of data analysts, right? Mm-hmm. That's really, we're talking about a different skill set. Mm-hmm. And what's happened a lot of times is, you know, companies need to show career growth to people in order to retain them. So they turn them into managers and they have them leading people. And sometimes it turns into a bit of a mess because they're not skilled in that way.
But Corey, you and I both recruit successfully out of that scenario. So everybody keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying nobody kicks a goal, but
it is, you know, absolutely, I agree with
it
you.
It is That's a problem, a nonetheless. Problem.
Well, and I'll say, Corey, you're saying not a plug, but I would, for anybody who's kind of interested in this topic, it is worth going to iqworkforce.com/careers, or just go to iqworkforce and look at the listings are pretty interesting, whether you're looking or not. I mean, it's a long list of titles, and that kind of, you know, sort of sparked us a little bit that it does range from, you know, data scientist roles to, you know, directors to manager type level positions. And
yeah, and what's kind of cool about it also, and germane to this conversation, is that, you know, in that list of jobs, and thank you for that, Tim, by the way, in that list of jobs, you know, sort of what I was talking about before, we have clients who are, you know, over on that left side of the analytics maturity curve. And, you know, we've got some, you know, web analytics manager jobs up there, you know, for companies that are just sort of catching on to that and, you know, getting it, trying to get their, you know, their web analytics up to cruising altitude. And then we've also got, you know, Wayfair and Instacart, you know, doing some really cool heavy-duty data science stuff. So there's sort of a full spectrum of our conversation in there.
So, Corey, I've got one question for the digital analyst that's listening. If there is one skill that he or she should learn in the next few years to make sure they have a job in 10 years, what do you think that is, that skill? What do you think they can't live without?
I think that depends very much on the individual and what they're good at and what they're interested in, because there are a few different directions that they can go in. If they're a digital analyst right now who's more inclined to move to the business side and be a data-driven marketer, data-driven somebody on the business side, the answer is going to be very different than if they're a digital analyst who wants to continue their career in analytics, right? So let's go with the latter. If you're a digital analyst and you find that you love analytics and you want to, you know, progress your career in that direction, there's really two different things that I would suggest. Number one, definitely learn SQL, because inevitably, if not in this role, then in the next, you're going to be expected to, you know, pull your own data and, you know, work with data across, you know, from different channels that are stored in some kind of data warehouse type of situation. And the other is, oh my God, I forgot the other one. That's a cliffhanger. Sorry.
I feel like a digital analyst who says, I really do gravitate towards the business, and now I've gotten a very, very thorough grounding in digital, so I can go into digital marketing or e-commerce or marketing because I've got that digital understanding and the data understanding, they'll be very successful. I always die a little bit inside because I'm like, no, because we still have a supply and demand gap. Do you see a bigger challenge on the supply or the demand when it comes to analyst and or data science roles?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we lost one. I'd say we got one on the inside. You know,
got one on.
Yeah, you know, we got a mole in there. You know,
there you go.
And I think the more that happens, the better it is for everybody. But I'm sorry, what was the question?
Well, is it where for years we've said that, or I have said that it's that digital analytics has been a great business to be in because the gap between supply and demand is so big that I just have to be just marginally above mediocre and I can, you know, continue to draw a paycheck. Is that closing with all the degree programs and more interest and just kind of the profession maturing? Is there more balance between supply and demand for the analytics and data science roles?
I think that there's, you know, so what I'll say about that, Tim, is that digital analytics is still a great way to break into analytics. You know, it's a relatively low bar to entry. You know, you can get yourself a junior analyst role, you know, on a team somewhere with a degree and a certificate and some, you know, some training, and you can develop skills that you can use in a lot of different career paths. I would say that the demand for digital analysts is certainly not where, you know, what it used to be. It's not the fever pitch, you know, where you would just die to get anybody who knew anything about it, but it's still really strong. It's still really hard to find good ones. You know, people who, you know, it's easier to find people who know the tools and who have digital analysts on their profile. It's still really hard to find people who can move the needle on the business and, you know, understand the question and the problem and can find the data and answer the question, solve the problem. That's still a very tough job to fill.
Well, I worry about those companies that are very early on the maturity curve and junior people getting those junior analyst roles and basically getting trained with a very, very, very limited scope as to what the future should be. Like I've definitely seen companies that are still kind of defining what they need based on what digital analytics was, what the best digital analytics could be 5 or 7 or 8 years ago. And I get nervous about people breaking into the field and not having the data science partner organization, you know, or not having the cross data.
Yeah, but I think that sometimes the drumbeat is too loud too. Because I had a conversation very recently with somebody on my team, and you know, they're fairly junior and they're sort of looking at their career progression and where they want to go in their career. And they're pretty convinced that unless they become a data scientist with really strong technical skills, that's it. Like, there's not going to be good job opportunities in the future. And I think that sent me into a lot of thinking. And so, like, I kind of categorized all the things that an analyst may do. And I kind of, I'm going to include data science and what an analyst can do. Because analyst, I mean, in the big term analyst, not entry level digital analyst. But, you know, there's people spend their entire careers in just one area of, you know, data collection, implementation, tools and systems, reporting and data visualization, analysis and insight generation, optimization, business strategy and governance and leadership and all those different things. All those areas could be a career. And so it's difficult, I think, for people to get a full picture sometimes.
But they can be a career, but if you're in a, and maybe we'll put small and maybe even medium-sized businesses aside for this, but if you're having that career inside a large or enterprise organization that doesn't have the data science capability, and maybe that's, it should be self-selecting that the, you know, winning on analytics, competing on analytics, back to Tom Davenport, that those companies will ultimately have to figure it out. So I think I want to, between the role and the organization, that I think where I'm starting to come down is, yes, there's plenty of a future without going into the quant and modeling and, you know, the technical side. But I worry about being an organization where there's no organization that has that capability and that capacity that should be becoming more emergent, and the role of the analyst shifts and that they should have that as a partner that they're working with.
As an analyst, though, you definitely do feel the pressure. You feel that you have to keep up with this stuff that you kind of can't. And I'm not speaking for all analysts. I'm speaking for myself. But I definitely don't feel like I can go into a very niche area. I feel like I need to keep my skills pretty broad and keep learning. And yeah, I'm sure there's lots of analysts that would probably share that sentiment.
Yeah, I certainly felt that way earlier in my career. And now that there's no hope for me, well, I'm just going to cruise. Well, but totally felt this similar way. And it's hard because, you know, eventually you can't be as good at other areas. Like, I'm just not ever going to be a really strong developer or someone with a strong technical skill set. And I've come to peace with that. But if someone's new to the industry or whatever, I don't want that to force them out. I want them to find where they fit. And that's kind of the challenge, I think, for a lot of the people kind of coming in and trying to find their way today.
Well, so Corey, that is making me, I gravitate towards, and I think everybody here gravitates towards learning and pushing and trying to understand the broader. So there's a generalist component, even though we hopefully are finding the specialization and the depth. When you're talking to candidates, do you have little pieces that, like, I think anybody who's going to work with digital data, doing any form of analytics, who says JavaScript terrifies me, should go find another profession. And I would think the same thing. You know, looking at a SQL query terrifies me and I want to avoid it. Like, to me, that's a red flag, but that's very different from saying, I'm going to go and learn SQL in depth, or I'm going to learn JavaScript in depth. Is that a fair way to view anyone in the broadest brush if they're not at least interested in learning some basics so that they can communicate and understand the mechanics behind things that maybe they... Okay.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. You know, if you're an analyst and you don't particularly feel like learning SQL because you think it's too technical for you, or you don't feel like, you know, or JavaScript scares you, then you should move to the business side, you know, and you should let analysts do their work. You know, you should, you know, listen to them and understand enough about what they do and respect the, you know, the power of the data and go do that. You can go have a great career doing that. On the other hand, you like to, you know, roll up your sleeves and get into the data and figure these things out, and you're curious about you know, where the data comes from and, you know, how, you know, all that stuff, and you want to learn and expand. And I think that there is a fantastic career for you in, you know, what Bo said before, in data analytics, you know, not necessarily in data science.
Not bad.
Cool. That's good. That's what I thought. I've learned something from you over the years.
I just, Tim, I was just going to say, though, it's okay to be scared as long as you're still curious. And I think that that's a kind of a differing point. You know, I've been terrified of some of the things that I now can do with quite a bit of ease. But as long as you have that curiosity and that desire to learn it or learn something, I think it's okay. But it's okay to look at JavaScript and be like, this scares me, and then get your head around it. It's more when you're just like, I really don't want to do this, that maybe you go to the business side.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I feel like I got to JavaScript where I dove in and dabbled enough and then realized it was kind of the same as VBA. And I'm like, I don't want to do this, but I've tinkered with it enough that I'm comfortable. I could have bailed on R a year ago, and I still would have gotten, it would have been valuable to have done the exploration. The fact is I gravitated more towards it. So yeah, I think that's, yeah. If you look at it and take the first glance and say, oh, hell no, then I think that's a problem. Yeah. Or to Corey's point, that is a, you know what, go be an informed marketer.
Yeah. Yeah. And go back to listen to episode one of this podcast. And if it doesn't resonate with you, then this show won't. And you probably haven't listened all throughout.
Well, it may resonate just because the audio's or echo
reverb,
or be static.
Reverberate.
Reverberate.
But just it goes. That's sort of the table stakes, right? Is the curiosity, the desire to innovate. And as you shape your career, I guess one of the things that's actually pretty awesome about analytics and data science generally is that as analysts, we still drive a lot of what our careers are going to go. And we're not being dictated to by our jobs or our industries as much as probably quite a few other ones. And that's kind of a really pleasant place to be as a professional.
Yeah, I think that's true, Michael. I think it's also important for people to be proactive about that.
Yes.
I think that a lot of people will learn what their job makes available to them. And then, you know, if you fast forward, you know, 5 or 10 years later, we'll regret not having, you know, gone in a different direction. You know, I think it's your job to, it's kind of a cliche, but, you know, kind of be the CEO of your career, you know, and figure out what's going on, educate, you know, see the big picture and know yourself and what you're good at, and what you enjoy, and have a plan, you know where you want to be in 5 years. Obviously you can deviate, you know, based on opportunities or change your mind, but you should have a plan and a learning plan and move yourself in that direction proactively.
Yeah, no, I love that. Well, we've gotten to the point where we're going to have to wrap up because we're running out of time, but this conversation is excellent. And hopefully it's not only helpful to the new analyst out there who's considering where their career is going to go, but even to those of us who've been around a long time who have built up a big set of digital analytics skills. And they're wondering, will these skills serve me well in the future? Anyways, Corey, thank you so much for coming on the show. One of the things we like to do is we like to go around the horn and share what we call a last call. It can be anything that we find interesting or something that's going on in the near future that we've seen recently. Corey, you're our guest. Do you have a last call you want to share?
I'm actually going to go back to the, it's literally the 5-year anniversary of Tom Davenport's article in HBR, Data Scientist, the Sexiest Job of the 21st Century. You know, so first of all, I can't believe it's 5 years. It's really kind of rude that time has moved that quickly. but I think if you go back and read it again, it's held up extremely well. You know, the main assertions have really played out, including all of the aspects that he focuses on the talent side. You know, things like, you know, he mentions, you know, there are important breakthroughs in tools and technologies. You know, at least as important are the people with the skill set to put them to use. And on this front, demand has raced ahead of supply. Could have written that today, you know, that's 5 years back. And, you know, so I'll spare you my whole long list of quotes here. But I think that part of what I wanted to say about this is, you know, kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, that, you know, this is 5 years, it's gone in a blip. And I think a lot of our clients still have data science up on the whiteboard, you know, haven't even really gotten to, you know, real data science. So I think that, you know, what we're looking at here is, again, a generational, you know, evolution. It's not something that's going to, you know, happen in mainstream business, you know, for in the next 5 years.
Nice.
Very nice. Who's next? Mo, you got one?
Okay, I've got one, but I have to give a disclaimer that this will be the last time, I promise, listeners, it will be the last time that I talk about an Aura package, but I've spent the whole weekend hanging out with this Aura package, and it's actually got me really excited and had some big wins with it. And if anyone wants to tweet me and correct my pronunciation, because I can never seem to pronounce it right, but it's a package called Aura PostgreSQL. And it literally has changed my life, because I keep dabbling in SQL and R and trying to pull things together. And this was the way that I could do both. So I'm pulling in some BigQuery data, and then I'm getting some data from our Redshift server using this SQL package. And if you haven't had a try, it actually, anyway, I had a very exciting weekend, as you can tell.
Well, clearly you need to... Once you've decided to drift over to the more business side of things, and we need to drop you from the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our packages as last calls, always welcome here. Hopefully.
I feel like I do it too
hopefully
much.
Hopefully you
though.
Stole Tim's thunder. Tim, what's
your... Yeah. I was hoping I would steal
Tim,
his thunder,
your,
actually.
What's your last call?
No. Okay, I had one that was just totally whimsical, and then I saw another one that was... I'm going to have to do two quick ones. One is... from courtesy of Mr. Simon Rumble, Mo's buddy. But he had posted an article from HackerNoon.com that is the AI hierarchy of needs, which is kind of, it's a short little article, but what it's nice. It's reminiscent. You can blur your eyes and think back to digital analytics 10 years ago, where it's basically laying out a little pyramid. It looks like a consultant saying, look, you know, there are companies that are diving into AI wildly prematurely. They don't have the data. They haven't got collection nailed down. They don't have storage. They haven't got the blocking and tackling done. So it's a great little read of, hey, is this somebody who's just chasing what's sexy, but they are woefully ill-equipped to actually act on it. So it actually seemed relevant to the topic of the podcast. But then I also feel like I realized just terribly, I don't think I've ever given a shout out to my favorite analytics song, but every time there's one of our group listen, turntable.fm or whatever the one is we're using now, I'm always the guy who comes in and puts on Todd Schneider's Statistician's Blues. So if you're at all into humorous music, it is definitely poking fun at statistics, but it's a good little listen. So I feel like that song doesn't get enough play in the industry.
Very nice.
So there's my twofer.
And my last call is actually, I am speaking today at Auburn University to their business analytics department about careers in analytics, and I'm stealing all the content from this episode for that talk. So great job. You played right into my diabolical hands. Moo-hoo, ha ha ha. No, but it's actually funny. Well, it's just economies of scale, you know? It's just always be... No, but hopefully in doing this, we can leverage some of that. And actually, if you are a student and you're thinking of a university, Auburn University seems like a pretty quality one. And I'm really excited to get a better understanding of their business analytics program as I go talk to them today. All right. If you've been listening and you're thinking, man, that is exactly what my career is going through, or I need more information about what I just heard about what Corey just said, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you, both through our Facebook page, our Twitter page, and through the Measure Slack. And Corey and his team would probably be happy to talk to you at IQ Workforce. If you're in the middle of a job search or you're thinking about your job opportunities, I've referred numerous people to Corey throughout my career, And I've always been very happy with how he's been able to help and identify great opportunities for those people. So personally,
likewise, to be clear, if you're looking to hire or looking, if you're looking to find somebody or looking to be a found person, he obviously has to cover both of those. So
exactly. So
and he won't. He's too nice to say it himself.
Yeah, he doesn't say so. I say so.
Doesn't mean I don't appreciate it though.
There you go. Anyways, thank you so much, Corey. Really appreciate having you on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
For my two co-hosts, Mo and Tim, keep learning data science out there, I guess.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Visit us on the web at analyticshour.io, facebook.com/analyticshour, or at analyticshour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
Yeah, well, you were struggling with Skype and Mo was running late. Corey's video wasn't working, so it was kind of the perfect storm. Okay. Of no one felt like they were.
There we go. All right, but now we are ready.
Oh my God, that is the funniest thing I've ever seen.
That's one reaction. You know, if you're concerned, Corey has tons of job opportunities.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking this. Oh, people in Australia don't drink coffee out of this. This is water. When you drink a coffee, the cup's like, yay.
It's not a jumbo diluted Americano.
In fairness, my sister probably drinks coffee out of this, so, you know.
He's programming a satellite or something.
Yeah. We're just redirecting the missiles now. You know, you just have to connect them up with AWS or Hive or Pig or other words I've learned.
What?
Oh, boy. Hey, now at least Moe's doing it to you. You're in fine company, let me tell you.
Although, Tim, check out my t-shirt today. Trying really hard.
Oh, look.
Oh, major can. Nice.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, we're nerding out hard.
Oh, my God.
We're nerding out hard.
I got distracted by Michael pouring that. We're gonna have to edit that out.
Corey's drooling on his keyboard. He's trying to save the electronics.
This is a two drink kind of show.
That looks delicious.
Rock flag and career advancement.